made a steak and egg.
When you order a steak and egg at a Taco Bell or any other kind of fast food, it's supposed to be just that, fast, so you don't get a lot of time to get to know the people behind the counter. I'm Gina Kaufman, and today on Central Standard, we'll get to know one Kansas City fast food worker a little bit better. We'll also hear how the local push for fast food worker unionization and $15 an hour is getting national attention, in part because of the stories being told with cell phone cameras. Those photos, along with protest signs, are on display in a Westport gallery. It's my pleasure to introduce Melinda Robinson, who works at Taco Bell. She's part of the Stand Up KC movement, and some of the photos she's taken of her daily life are included in the exhibit, I Too Am America. Hi, Melinda.
Hello.
We're also joined by Hannah Lodwick. She curated the exhibit. Hannah, welcome to Central Standard.
Hi, thanks for having me.
This photography project is part of the Langston Hughes Club. What is the Langston Hughes Club?
The Langston Hughes Club is a club of about 20 fast food workers who have been on strike for the past 2 years, including Melinda, who we have here today. They've taken photos with the help of Steve Herbert and a few other members of Stand Up KC to document their lives.
I'm going to jump back into Melinda's story shortly, but what inspired you to get involved with this movement from an artistic angle?
I've been a part of the movement from a non-artistic angle since it's begun in the past 2 years. My fiance is an organizer with the movement, so I've helped out giving rides, helping with protest signs, doing all the nitty-gritty for the past 2 years. I've also helped out with some aesthetic stuff along the way, whether that be small graphic design stuff. I've painted signs, but then more recently, with my artistic background, I helped the Langston Hughes Club, I Too Am America, and curate the show at the Talk Shop.
The title, like you just said, is I Too Am America, and it references a Langston Hughes poem that's called I Too. Tell me about the poem.
The poem is more commonly known as I Too Sing for America. The last line of it is it culminates into I Too Am America. So myself, Rachel, and a few other members with Steve were trying to brainstorm together in the office what really, like, we wanted a quote from Langston Hughes and what would really kind of encompass what we're trying to get at with the show. And I think
that
what,
poem tells a story, though, really. It's a story of African-American workers who are not welcomed to sit and eat at the table, but who work in the kitchen. And it's, I mean, the story is really like, one day I'm going to sit at the table and people, I mean, part of that poem, too, is that people will be ashamed and they'll see that I'm beautiful.
Exactly.
I mean, that poem, talk to me about that poem in conjunction with the artwork on display.
For us, I think it's trying to get a perspective into what these fast food workers' lives are from a first-person perspective. I think many people in Kansas City, especially in the Westport area, aren't maybe commonly aware of what, you know, living in poverty and having to work for these multi-billion dollar companies really means for these workers. And so being able to see it from their perspective is very helpful. And that these are Americans, this is a very historically motivated movement, racially motivated, obviously economically motivated. And so hearing it from that perspective and hearing how Langston Hughes' experience, you know, at the lunch counter really are important to then contextualize for today.
What caught my attention about the photographs in this show was something so simple and so obvious, but it's something that makes a huge difference, too. I was seeing really familiar things from a different vantage point. These aren't sound bites from fast food workers. They're stories entirely framed by these workers from their point of view. Can you point out maybe a specific image that you think shows a different perspective than the people you expect to be your viewers are used to seeing?
Absolutely. I think this show and the curatorial style that I came from was to show a survey and not have a specific voice within my curation to show maybe one genre from the fast food workers, whether that be maybe family photos like Melinda has or photos in the workplace. But I tried to have a little bit of breadth from each different grouping. And so from that, I think that there are different sorts of photos that people can kind of take away from. Most importantly, for me, there's a photo that everyone went to Ferguson, actually, to be in solidarity with, obviously, what was going on over there about 6 months ago in the fall. And it was Dana's birthday, who's a fast food worker, who's awesome and is so, so empowering. And, you know, these workers can't afford like a big flat sheet cake, like 11 by 17. And one of the fast food workers took a photo of this, and you can just slightly see in the background, hands up, don't shoot. But it's not anything that's maybe immediately
So in the foreground is the birthday cake?
Mm-hmm. And it's really big, and it's like this beautiful photo that's like presenting this cake to this person that's probably never been able to afford something so large and so kind of extravagant. And for it to be kind of politically contextualized in that manner, obviously St. Louis doesn't look too different in the landscape from Kansas City. I don't think you would notice maybe it's from Ferguson rather than reading the title, which does kind of state that. So there's always like the second reading, I think, behind these photos. And that one for me is really particularly important.
And the birthday cake is interesting because you talked about the importance of seeing what it's like to live in poverty, but it's not, you're not showing only the difficulty. It's usually intermixed with, yeah, these universal human things like birthdays.
Yeah, and that's actually Melinda's photo, and the title is Organize, Strike, Protest, and Celebrate, which is such a great, great title. And it is really about how this has been a movement for 2 years, and that's been wonderful for me to see these workers know each other, and there's a community that we're building where we can celebrate Dana and we can celebrate Melinda's kids' birthdays, and it's really movement building and wonderful to build these relationships.
Well, Melinda, I want to talk to you about your art. Start by telling me about that image. We just heard about it from Hannah's perspective. Tell me about taking that photograph.
That picture meant a lot because, like Hannah said, we were in Ferguson for the Mike Brown. And even though that we're doing something that's very serious to us, we still have time to celebrate and show our appreciation to our family members, because Stand Up KC is family.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to get back to the art, but first tell me a little bit about yourself. Did you grow up in Kansas City?
No, I didn't. I grew up in Ohio. I came to Kansas City in 99.
What brought you here?
Family.
Is your job at Taco Bell your first fast food job, or have you worked others?
No, I've been in the fast food industry for 22 years.
22 years. What started you down that path? Take me back to the time in your life where this seemed like a good option or a viable option.
Well, my first job was Wendy's in Ohio, and I love people. I like working with people. So I guess just staying in fast food is something that I like to do because I deal with people every day.
Tell me about those interactions with people. What exactly, how would you describe them, how you interact with either your coworkers or the customers who come in for food?
I put smiles on their faces. I'm a happy person, even though things are rough, I'm still going to work with a smile on my face. It's just when people have bad days and they come into work, I try to change their days and make them into better days.
What are some of the details of your job that most people out there wouldn't necessarily think about if they haven't had this kind of job?
Wow, it's hard because, you know, these are billion-dollar corporations, and we go to work every day. We work hard every day. And, you know, we face discrimination in our jobs. We face harassment in our jobs.
What does that look like?
What does that look like? It hurts. It's very painful that we have to deal with something like this. But yet and still, we put a smile on our face, and we go to work every day.
Can you describe some of the kinds of things you encounter that you're getting at here?
Wow, it's a lot. No benefits that we have to deal with. People get hurt at work, and there's no first aid kits to help until further help is needed. You know, women are not allowed to fry foods. They're only supposed to be in front counter, cashiering or in the drive-through window, you know, but yet and still, you know, we could work as hard as men do.
That's, yeah, a lot of fascinating details that, yeah, from the outside when you're just ordering food, you obviously wouldn't encounter. You are married and have 6 kids, is that right?
Seven.
7 kids. How does it all work with your job, your husband's job, the hours, the daycare bills? How do you guys juggle all of that?
We try to work around. I try to work around my husband's schedule because I no longer have childcare. So I try to go in after he goes in, after he gets off, I go into work. And our bills, you know, back to working every day and, you know, coming home to having your lights off, you know, not being able to take showers at your house and having to go to your job and wash up in the sinks, you know, because you can't afford your bills. I mean, those are very hurtful things, you know, but yet and still, we work for these billion-dollar companies and our appreciation is nothing.
How did you first get involved in the Stand Up KC movement? Like, how did you find out it was going on?
It was going around. When it first came to me, they were trying to raise the minimum wage. And I got involved then.
When was this?
This was back in 2012. But then, you know, as it got out and people starting to realize, like, hey, you know, I deserve better. We came together and we started brainstorming like, hey, you know, we deserve more. We deserve a livable wage and a voice on our job. So that's what that's how we came across the 15 in a union.
Were you at all conflicted about whether to join in or did you feel sure right away that this was something you wanted to do and felt comfortable doing?
I felt very comfortable. This is not something that I wanted to do. This is something that I needed to do, you know. My kids need a better life. I need a better life. And, you know, all working Americans deserve a better life. So we needed to do this. And I joined and I wouldn't regret it for a moment.
Talk to me about how it works to be on strike and then go back to work at that job. You know, is that awkward?
To me, no. You know, going on strike and going back to work, it makes you feel a lot different. It makes you feel like, hey, you know, I could come to work and I could be proud because I'm doing something that, you know, we deserve. So going on strike and then walking back to your job, it just makes you feel just amazing.
How does it work? I hear there's like paperwork that gets filed and a witness who comes with you so that it's not as though you were just absent from work. Take me through the process.
Okay. How it happens is you have an organizer and they come to you and they have you sign 2 sheets of paper, one stating that, hey, she's not going to be at work this day. And which, you know, they can't write you for no call, no show. And then the other one is, hey, you know, she's coming back. You know, you can't retaliate against her in any form. And then on your shift, when you go back to work, you have allies that walk you back.
I've heard that Mayor Sly James has been one of these people who has walked people back to work. Has he ever walked you back to work?
No, I haven't had a chance to have him walk me back yet. But, you know, who knows? It might happen.
So when you started taking cell phone photographs, what was that like? Had you been interested in photography before?
I haven't been interested in it, but I've always done it. I like taking pictures, you know, so when the Langston Hughes Club came about, I was really excited about it because I love pictures.
As you practiced and started doing it more through this program, do you think that you've developed a style?
Yeah, it's called a family style. yeah, you know, it's now that I understand what photos are, you know, the meaning to them are real more to me and real understanding to me now. So the pictures that I take, I really enjoy them now better than ever.
Tell me about the family style. I know what I mean, what you mean, because I've seen your photos. There's one that is really great. It's of a young boy, I'm guessing maybe your son, but the way that it's framed, you see just one of his eyes. He's got his head tilted, so you can't see the top eye, and it's just zoomed in so closely on him in a way that tells you something about the intimacy, you know?
Yeah. That picture is of my son, Mikey. Everybody loves that picture. That's actually my husband's favorite picture. He's just, all my children are very photogenic. They see the phone, they're like, Mommy, take my picture. So, you know, I'm getting all types of snapshots. That one, actually, he took of himself, which he did a real good job.
He did. What do you want people to take away from seeing that photo or any of your other family photos?
I just want people to understand, I don't want you... You don't need to just hear about our stories. You need to see our stories and what it's like to live in poverty. And we want you to understand that, you know, this is something that is happening every day, you know, and we want you to come join us, you know, support us in our movement and understand why this movement is important.
Did you go to the gallery opening?
I actually was the MC on the first night.
What did you think of the other photographs in the show? Did you relate to any of them in especially?
I related to almost all of them. Personally, I have. I've been down that road numerous of times in all the pictures.
But there's no one image that really caught your attention that you keep thinking about?
No, because they all caught my attention. You know, Stand Up KC and the people that are in the Langston Hughes Club are my family. And, you know, we talk about these pictures among other things that goes on in our lives. So I didn't have a particular one because they're all just amazing.
I want to turn back to Hannah because there is an image that caught my attention that's of the Kansas City skyline. And this is so different from the image of the Kansas City skyline that you would see in a tourism brochure or something like that. It's from a vantage point where there's a cement wall kind of in the foreground. So it's like the city skyline is this small thing off in the distance with a big white wall in between you and that destination, I guess. Who took that image, and can you tell me about it?
I do remember that image, but I think the name escapes me. I'm so sorry. But that image did really catch my eye. I know exactly where it is in the show, exactly the place I curated it and placed it on the wall. But that image is, I think, particularly striking. I think it's from a northeastern perspective, it seems, on the city skyline. And it is very stark. It also, I think because of the cell phone, some cell phones have better clarity than others. But that photo particularly has a lot of blur, has like a lot of grit, I think, to it that really helps, I think, articulate it to not be as maybe touristy as what we expect from a Kansas City skyline. But it is interesting how something can be so iconic, can be so ubiquitous between, you know, everyone recognizes that and recognizes that to be Kansas City and their home. But their home means something so different to every different person. And so for a fast food worker, it is really striking that perspective.
There's also a cluster of images that are all of sort of workplace logistical details, mm-hmm. like a sign that tells people that they're on lockdown for the next 2 hours, which I presume means they can't leave their workstations. Pay stubs, sign in, sign out, work calendars. Can you talk about that cluster and why you grouped those all together that way?
Absolutely. So the talk shop is on Main Street and they're through a church. So they're not necessarily a white cube gallery that I'm maybe more accustomed to curating in. And so there are these false doors that are obviously drywalled over that don't work. And, you know, it's maybe not the best scenario. And so I tried to use it to my advantage and have it be kind of like a post-it board. So I put all of these different photographs on that wall. And it's striking from my perspective, not being in fast food shops, how ironic they are. And I don't think that maybe they realize that in the postings. It's like, pay for these McDonald's shoes. They're $35. Maybe you can get 15% off on a coupon. But like, to have that, like, to understand that these workers are having to work maybe 7 hours to be able to afford those shoes, or know, one of the signs that's particularly striking is know your money. And then it has, it's obviously for counterfeit bills, but these workers, to know your money and to know, maybe to see a $100 bill is not something that these people are accustomed to. And to understand that from that perspective was maybe a little alarming.
As part of this project, an international experienced photojournalist who's done work for like the New York Times came in to teach participants a few tricks of the trade. Did you sit in on those sessions?
I did not, actually, but Steve is fabulous, and I'm sure he helped out quite a bit.
Melinda, did you get to learn from Steve?
Yes, I did, and he's amazing. Like I said, he trained us on, you know, our photos and what the details are of the photos, what photos to take, you know, that has the most meaning. So Steve is awesome.
What do you think that training in like visual storytelling has to do with the visibility of the Kansas City fast food worker movement? Because there are movements in cities all over the country.
They are, but you know, being able to see and visualize the fast food workers living in poverty is a lot better than just hearing about it.
Central Standard is headed to a short break. When we return, we'll bring a UMKC professor of film and media arts in on this discussion to put the exhibit in a broader context, the history of protest art. I'm Gina Kaufman. Don't go away. I'm Gina Kaufman, and today's Central Standard is all about earning a living wage as a fast food worker and documenting the experience with cell phone photography. That photography is on display at the Talk Shop Gallery at 39th and Main. The gallery has open hours this Saturday from 11 to 3 for anyone who's interested in checking it out. We're joined by Melinda Robinson, a participant in the Stand Up KC movement. She's a fast food worker, and her photos are in the exhibit I Too Am America. We've also got Hannah Lodwick, who curated the exhibit. Now let's hear from Caitlin Horseman. She teaches film and media studies at UMKC, and she's going to put this photography project in context. Hi, Caitlin.
Hi.
Is there a precedent for this kind of art fueled by a protest movement, or maybe I should say a protest movement fueled by art?
There is. Ever since the sort of beginning of photography, the idea of merging image making with politics has been something that people consider. And particularly around the time of the Great Depression, there was a really big movement in the U.S. context called the Film and Photo Leagues, and they happened all over the country, where workers would get together and document their lives, their protest lives, their home lives, as a way of imagining the world through their perspective. And the audience for the work was really thought to be other workers and the public. And there was a sensibility in the movement that it mattered, that it was coming from the people who were making the photos, that the perspective of workers was important.
That interests me that the audience was understood as fellow workers. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, I mean, the part of the movement was interested in sort of using photography and also film, actually, as a way of building community and conversation and sort of sharing what people were doing in different parts of the country in protest movements. There was also a public part of it, but it was certainly a moment at which, you know, exhibitions were happening in churches and union halls and so on.
Is there something about workers' rights in specific that lends itself to this kind of tool for mobilization? I mean, something about the plight of a large and to the public eye anyway, anonymous workforce?
I think that there is certainly something to be said about seeing things from the inside. Oftentimes, we see images of people living in poverty that come from an outsider's perspective. And even in the most sort of, at the moment at which America imagined artists as workers, most specifically in the WPA, we still see people sort of coming from the outside to document the lives of people who are different from them. And one of the things that I think is so important about the Langston Hughes Club's project is that it really reverses that dynamic. And so, you know, there's a sense in which we all sort of know the Walker Evans photos, for example.
Tell us about those in case one of our listeners doesn't.
This is a part of the WPA project that documented poverty in U.S. Farm workers in particular. But this is sort of the moment at which, you know, what would it be like if those farm workers took pictures of him? Right. So or if they took pictures of the things in their lives that were important. So what I think the perspective, tends to happen when people come in from outside is that the terrain of life becomes simplified, and we get a perspective that really is just about the kind of spectacle of poverty. And as we see,
sort of maybe a pitying view, which is definitely not what you see in the images in this exhibit, which, yeah, as I was saying before, there's celebration and the good in life in those too.
Absolutely.
That's interesting what you're saying about Walker Evans. There's another photographer from that period, Dorothea Lange, who takes also photographs of farm workers, migrant farm workers usually, and they look very, I guess, bedraggled and sad and dusty. And there's, if you see the multiple photographs taken to get those, they don't all look as sad as the famous ones. I think that's really interesting. What is the history during this time period of reversing that lens? Was there a history of that?
Dorothea Lange's actually an interesting example because she joined the movement and was part of labor organizing and sort of part of this idea that an internal perspective is an important one. And I don't know. I mean, the question of, you know, how you pick what is the most important image, I think, is part of what we're talking about. Right.
How do you make that choice?
Well, I think the artist makes that choice, right? So Melinda might have some perspective
Melinda,
on that.
Melinda, how do you make that choice? How do you choose what are the most important images of the ones you've taken?
I don't know, because they're all important. I mean, I just closed my eyes and just picked one. And, you know, unfortunately, the ones that I picked are the ones that, you know, people are seeing of my daily life. And I mean, there's just so many more pictures that we have out there that people haven't had a chance to see that eventually you get a chance to see.
What is one of the images that maybe you wish you had selected?
God, there's just so many of them. You know, what it's like inside my home. You know, I have pictures that are inside my home that, you know, there's a few pictures that's at the gallery of inside people's houses. But, you know, just being inside my home with six kids in a two-bedroom house, you know, the images that I have on my phone, we'd be like, wow.
You know, Caitlin, I want to turn back to you to ask if there are milestones historically in specific movements that were reached because of a compelling image or set of images that swayed either politicians, employers, or public opinion, which would put pressure on one of those two groups.
Well, I think actually recently there are so many great examples of that, right? And that the cell phone actually has made sort of documenting things in the unofficial version very much a part of the landscape of not only politics, but newsmaking.
Give us some of those examples.
So, I mean, Eric Garner would be a great example. Rodney King is a great example. So, I mean, all of these moments for which there are alternatives to the official version, I think become a way in which this sort of different perspective on the truth becomes a part of the conversation about what it means to live in our culture and what it means to be sort of infinitely photographable, right?
infinitely photographable. I like that phrase. Will you unpack it a little?
Well, I mean, I think not only in the sort of sense of the surveillance state, if you want to think about things that way, but just in the fact that all of us has the power to sort of frame the world and shape it through images in our pocket or purse. And so that, you know, the conversation that we're having culturally through images, if we think about something like Instagram or Facebook, becomes more and more dynamic when we think about not only the possibilities of, you know, the next unboxing video, but the possibilities of actually finding a sort of politics in the perspectives that are now not only recorded, but able to be accessed in an unprecedented way.
Yeah, the broadcasting of images through social media is interesting. I mean, anyone has access to that, presumably, but getting an audience on social media does mean that someone has to be looking at what you are sharing. Can you talk about that process, the politics of that? How do you see where's the significance there?
I don't know. I mean, I think the question of audience is an interesting one, right? And it's complicated. But I guess I'm more interested in the fact that the images are made, not necessarily their sort of rank in social significance. But they're all sort of a kind of knowledge production, right? And a kind of knowledge production that is important and interesting.
What catches your attention about this show, the art itself or even the process behind it?
I think the art itself is really striking and as a whole really presents a kind of perspective on the world that we don't get to see, and certainly one that we don't often get to see in an art space context. And it is, I think, a moment to really sort of appreciate the possibilities of authorship that art offers, that we really can see the world from lots of different perspectives. And I really would love for everyone to go and see it, and would love to celebrate the Langston Hughes Club and Hannah and stand up for making this the sort of version of the world available to us.
I'd like to kind of jump off on the audience question.
Please, Hannah.
That was something that was interesting for me. I probably the majority, like three quarters of me is on the art side and one quarter is on the maybe dealing with politics, dealing with Stand Up KC. An audience is something that was particularly striking for this gallery show because there's a lot of traffic on that corner for First Fridays. And so there were a lot of people unfamiliar with the movement that were able to go to the exhibition, that were able to talk to these workers who maybe feel uncomfortable going as an ally on the strikes. And so there was definitely a boundary that was, you know, being broken that
night. In the physical world, not online. That's goes against so much of what we think about what the internet facilitates.
Absolutely. And this is an issue that affects us all. And I think that's so important. These fast food workers are working full time and are living in poverty, and taxpayers are subsidizing that. And so that affects me, even though I'm not a fast food worker, I've never been. And that's an important issue for us all. And so the gallery opening and having that issue be at the forefront, I think, was really important for talking about audience and having the idea of having this moving to other exhibitions.
Hannah, do you think there could be a danger here in people not thinking of this stuff as art, just period, because of the role of the agenda? I mean, it could be dismissed by some people just as propaganda. So setting aside political and economic goals for just a moment, what would you say about just the art here, the artistic merit of the photographs being displayed?
I think that's definitely a striking question and is one that has been brought up. And I think absolutely, first and foremost, it's art. I do come from an art historical perspective. And I think photography is a medium that is something that we all now have access to. But photography no longer has to prove itself as being photography because it is now almost a 100-year-old medium, whereas painting and painters can, after abstract expressionism, don't need to show that they are realists, that they can paint a perfect portrait. And I think the same is happening in photography, where you don't need to prove that you can do a perfect black and white darkroom still life, for instance, but rather this is a tool that is powerful that we all have access to, and these workers are able to enable to show their perspective. And I think Steve definitely was able to work with them on talking about composition and lighting and shooting and everything.
Melinda, what are your next steps as a photographer?
Continue taking pictures.
That's always a good next step.
Yeah. You know, just continue doing what we're doing, you know, just get them snapshots that, you know, are not, you know, hey, sit there, you know, pose like this, you know, just get them ones that are not ones that you should get, but you really should get.
The candid ones.
Yes.
There are signs all over the gallery that ask for each worker's name, place of employment, and why they're part of this movement. What did your sign say?
Mine said I worked at Taco Bell, and the reason why I'm fighting for 15 in a union is, of course, for my family and for equality and dignity on the job place.
Melinda Robinson, thank you for being here today and telling your story.
Thank you for allowing me.
And Hannah Lodwick, it's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
Caitlin Horseman, UMKC Professor of Film and Media Studies, I appreciate your perspective.
Thanks.
Next up on Central Standard, when you're teetering near the poverty line, is there such a thing as making too much money? We'll look into it after this break. I'm Gina Kaufman. Stay tuned.